Hi folks, I'm Jalene Fenner and welcome to a special Strong Tower Radio feature program with my co-host,
Tom Mesher.
And Tom, this is a very important program we're doing for Michigan listeners and voters because we're going to be just helping our listeners to try to understand the three proposals that are on the Michigan ballot.
There's a lot to be involved in this, and we're going to just try to whet their appetites, and they may want to do further research on their own. But ultimately, each person needs to make their own decision.
That's right. And we just want to try to, we're going to read the ballots and discuss, because there's pros and cons, but just so you're educated more, so you understand.
Yes.
And in the studio, we have with us our president of Strong Tower Radio, David Bolduc.
Hello, Jalene and Tom. Good to be here.
And we also have Cam Ferguson, who is our development director.
Jalene, Tom, good to be here.
Thank you.
So, Tom, before we get started, let's have a word of prayer.
Our Father in heaven, we just want to have wisdom. We need your wisdom on these votes. We want to make decisions that you honor and support our government in ways that we as Christians need to do. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know some Christians sometimes feel maybe that they shouldn't be voting, and that's a personal decision. But I've always said, whether it's politics or wherever organizations I'm on, if I'm not going to get involved, then I don't complain about how it turns out.
Okay, that's right.
So, okay, I'm going to read the proposal one. And
we have three proposals on this. It's the voting date is November 8th. And so you have to go to your local place. You may want to do that research ahead of time if you haven't voted for a while.
That's right. Or if you're going to absentee ballot, I'm not sure if it's too late yet to check with your clerk. But proposal one is called Term Limits for Legislators. And this is what it says. A proposal to amend the state constitution to require annual public financial disclosure reports by legislators and other state officers and change state legislator term limit to 12 total years in legislature. This proposed constitutional amendment would require members of legislature, governor, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, and attorney general file annual public financial disclosure reports after 2023, including assets, liabilities, income sources, future employment agreements, gifts, travel reimbursements, and positions held in organizations except religious, social, and political organizations. Require legislative implement but not limit or restrict reporting requirements. Replace current term limits for state representatives and state senators with a 12-year total limit in any combination between House and Senate, except a person elected to Senate in 2022 may be elected the number of times allowed when that person became a candidate. Should this proposal be adopted? You mark either yes or no.
Yes means to approve it, and no is to reject this proposal.
So what is that saying?
Let's go to David.
Oh, boy. You know, I'm not going to pretend to be a legal expert, but whenever I personally, this is my personal, I get very nervous whenever we talk about amending the Constitution.
Me too, David.
So from that perspective, I want to make sure it's very clear. I've got a sign up in Master Control that says, check your work, that there's no issues with this. And me personally, again, I just want to make sure this is it. And so I want to really research this before I vote yes or no on this. So I'm not going to try and weigh in and say what I feel, but I'm just kind of concerned about the term limits. And also that part in there, it says about reporting income sources. Where's the reporting the income? Just my question.
Well, it doesn't say how much. It just says income sources.
Yeah, it doesn't say.
So somebody could give you $1 million. You just would say who that came, that they gave you $1 million maybe, but not how much.
Yeah. So that's just a question I have. I want to really dig into this, and that's why I want to sit in on this recording, because I would just keep asking the listeners, have you dug into this? Do you understand this? There's a lot of great resources out there, but do you have a clear understanding of what this says?
And the resources that we've been working with is Bridge Michigan, which is thought to be more unbiased.
Yes, bridgemi.com.
Yes, and then the other one was Ballotpedia.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
It's very, very interesting.
Right.
We all spent time with it. Cam, weigh in on this one.
Well, one of the things that I found very insightful is that the initial format of this proposal gave the highest standard of the U.S. Congress disclosure, and then it was reduced. So there's a lesser standard that's being applied to proposal number one than initially put forth. And so that immediately gives me concern. Is this the highest standard that we can do for the state of Michigan?
So you're saying the federal government
has a higher standard.
Has a higher standard than what this proposal is doing for Michigan.
Correct. And so to me, I ask why. And it's very interesting, too, that the person who drafted the 1992 proposal that currently is law, where you have three terms of 2 years in the House and two terms of 4 years in the Senate for a total of 14, that person is not in favor of this. And so I'm thinking, well, why? This person was favorable to term limits, still is, but does not favor the current proposal. And when you look at the impact of 12 years in either chamber, House or Senate, you can effectively have senior level officials who are helping to drive policy. And the proponents of this are saying that this will help to not only prevent career politicians, but also to help with people getting a clearer understanding of how to operate in the legislature. I say, okay, that sounds reasonable. We already have an example that we can look to. The federal House has no limits. If you think that increasing the length of time that the federal House is working well, you're going to favor this proposal. If you don't think it helps, then you won't favor this proposal. But again, we're simply telling you some of the pros and cons of it. Mm-hmm. You need to do the research. So
because,
you need to understand.
Because right now, in the state of Michigan, it's 6 2-year terms for the House and 2 4-year terms for Senate. So, but you can go from being 6 years a congressperson to 4 years of being in the Senate. And that's a max of 14 years, which is longer than this.
Correct.
So folks, you need to study and understand what this is all about.
Now, Jelaine, that's only one of three proposals, and yep. Some of the more controversial ones are yet to come. So let's go over to proposal number two. Would you read us proposal number two
says promote the vote. A proposal to authorize additional absentee voting provisions, early in-person voting, and donations to fund elections, and add current legal requirements for voter identification and post-election audits and canvasses to the Michigan Constitution. This proposed constitutional amendment would recognize fundamental right to vote without harassing conduct, require military or overseas ballots to be counted if postmarked by Election Day, provide voter right to verify identity with voter ID or signed statement, provide voter right to single application to vote absentee in all elections, require state-funded absentee ballot drop boxes and postage for absentee applications and ballots, provide that only election officials may conduct post-election audits, require 9 days of early in-person voting, allow donations to fund elections, which must be disclosed, and require canvass boards to certify election results based only on the official records of votes cast. Should this proposal be adopted? Yes or no?
David, let's start with you.
Well, you know, there's some good things in here I like about it, personally, because my family has been very helpful in the local elections. They just love to be a part of that. And that part where they have to pay for the postage, that's a huge cost to the township. So that's a good thing about it. I like that part of it. One of the concerns I have is whenever the last presidential election came, there was the absentee voting that was changed. And this seems to be either negating that or just it's continually evolving.
Expanding.
Yeah. So I'm just kind of concerned about that. The biggest thing I'm concerned about, well, two things. 9 days of voting. Now, imagine whenever you go to vote, the precinct is open. They start at 7 o'clock. They get out there and say, hear ye, the, you know, polls are open. And then they close at 8 o'clock. Okay. So imagine doing that 9 days consecutive. And I believe that's leading up to election day. So you have 10 days of voting. Now, what happens once the day is over? How do you secure the equipment? That's just a question I have.
So that has to be secured until the next day.
Right.
Overnight.
Yes.
Somebody's got to be watching it. And it, the way it is now, basically you have election day and then you secure.
It's being watched all day long.
And then you close the election, you tabulate it, it's under security. Mm-hmm. You've got like 24 hours or whatever time to grab. This is like expanding that exponentially.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think one of the questions that we voters need to ask themselves, will this make elections more accessible, but does the integrity of the election, does it increase or does the integrity decrease with some of these measures? And people need to ask themselves and look deeply into this.
Right.
Will this increase integrity?
We're not trying to convince anybody or persuade anybody. We're just sharing our concerns. The other thing is, I know in my personal jurisdiction, the township I live, there was not too long ago a time when we voted that there were 6 different specific ballots that were being issued.
In one township,
right. Because we're kind of at the crossroads of jurisdictions for schools and county commissioners and all that stuff. So we had to say, here's our address. You show them your ID, even though they know me there. I show them my ID. And they said, okay, you get a purple ballot. Okay, that's cool. So give me a purple ballot. Now, my neighbor down the road gets a blue ballot because they're in a completely even though they're right close by, they're on that line they have to cross over. Now, I was reading on bridgedmi.com and Ballotpedia that there's possibly a solution to this by sending everybody to the county office to vote during this 9 days of voting. And so my concern is, how do they know down there at the county office? And I'm sure they will. But do you see that there's a potential confusion on that? Because I'm up in the north edge of the county. I've got to go down 20 miles or so to get to the county office and vote and to make sure I get the right ballot. And I'm not sure if I've got the right ballot until I look at it and like, I don't recognize these names. How many people have studied every ballot they go to vote? They just
vote.
Start checking off, right. So how do you know you get the exact right ballot? And the other question is, if it's electronic, that's one thing. But if the clerk has to hand off a stack of ballots from each different ballot styles, how do they get those back and how do they account for those? You know, there's numbers on all of them. But there's just this introduces a lot more confusion. And so it's hard, going back to that sign I've got in Master Control, it says check your work. How do you check your work when you got all these variables floating around?
You added variables, more confusion to the process.
And it's making it very murky, you know. It's kind of, how do you fix that?
Well, Cam, or do you have some thoughts on this?
Yeah, the flexibility that's built into Proposal 2 is very appealing. And, you know, it also says that election security is also insured. And opponents, however, are saying that it's open for abuse because now you have numerous ballot drop points that you didn't have before. Now you have to mail your absentee ballot into a certain place. And there's opportunity. This has been done in many other countries where these types of systems can be abused. And even less complicated systems have been abused. And so Michigan has over 1,000 jurisdictions that would require, they'd have to do a lot more work. It would be a 10-day window instead of a one-day window. And so there's a lot of risk here. And so if you think this is going to help secure the vote, then you'll want to vote for it. If you think that the risks are problematic, you're not going to want to vote for Proposal 2.
One other thing that I think the listeners and the voters need to consider is external accepting charitable and in-kind donations to assist in running the election. I think elections should avoid any external influences.
Should be, well, very transparent, but yeah, are they going to be influencing? And the question I have, because I vote absentee ballot, every time there's an election, they send me an application, and then we fill it out, and then I get a ballot. What this is saying, you just have to fill it out once.
And you get it forever.
And you'll get it forever. Well, what happens when I move and somebody else gets my ballot? So that's some of my concern about this.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we have a third ballot, and this is probably one of the ones that some of our listeners will be most concerned about. Will you read that one, Shalane?
Right. Proposal 3 is reproductive freedom for all. And what it says is a proposal to amend the state constitution to establish new individual right to reproductive freedom, including right to make all decisions about pregnancy, allow state to prohibit abortion in some cases, and forbid prosecution of individuals exercising established right. This proposed constitutional amendment would establish new individual right to reproductive freedom, including right to make and carry out all decisions about pregnancy, such as prenatal care, childbirth, postpartum care, contraception, sterilization, abortion, miscarriage management, and infertility. Allow state to prohibit abortion after fetal viability unless needed to protect a patient's life or physical or mental health. Forbid state discrimination in enforcement of this right. Prohibit prosecution of an individual or a person helping a pregnant individual for exercising rights established by this amendment, and invalidate all state laws that conflict with this amendment should this proposal be adopted. Yes or no?
David?
Well, that's a big one. And you know, there's one word to me that I don't see in here is consequences. Whenever my wife and I, we had our three children, I cut the umbilical cords in all three of them. I firmly believe that there is a responsibility of the father, and I don't see that in here. And I know that there are a lot of situations, especially in the big cities, where it's very unfortunate, and I'm not going to try and weigh in on what people should think or what they should do, but I would like to see one word changed where it says individual. And I know that people have choices they want to make, and I'm not standing in the way of the choices, but whenever it talks about an individual, I would like to see that word be changed to the mother.
Cam?
Well, this proposal in one way is pretty clear. Either you favor abortion and you will vote for Proposal 3, or you oppose abortion and you will oppose Proposal 3. But there's some great, I won't say greater concerns, but some additional related concerns. And the language in this proposal is particularly broad and sometimes vague. And in fact, there's several nonprofit groups who once stated as much of the language is broad, undefined, and situation specific, the parameters of this right will be determined by potential legal challenges. So this is one of those proposals that you set it in place and then you figure out later on through the court system what certain terms mean and how those actually get applied in laws.
So in other words, even though this is a constitutional amendment, which is hard to change, the fact that it is decided by judicial officials is a lot of interpretation, and we don't know what the implication. In fact, one of the things I read is both sides agree this will end up in the courts.
Correct.
That's the only thing they agree on.
That's about the only thing they both agree on. And that's very significant because if legislation, whether it's in the legislature or in a proposal like this to the Constitution, whoever's drafting it, and we ultimately take that and look at it and say, okay, yes or no. So that makes us as citizens the drafters of this because we're either saying, yes,
approving.
We'll take it, we'll approve it, or we'll disapprove it. Then it becomes ours. And if we're going to take and approve something that has broad language and everyone who's looked at it agrees, it will have to go run through court in various ways to define how this is applied legally. That goes back to something we talked about earlier. Is this the highest standard?
Right.
And I look at that and I just can't find that it is, but maybe, you know, that's maybe just my perspective.
So, Cam, am I hearing you saying that when we have these proposals constitutional, the voter makes a decision, but in some ways the voter's making a decision to approve yes or to deny no, but in some ways we're delegating, if you vote for, you're really delegating it to some other party. The voter is not ultimately making decision because of the wide interpretation or lack of clarity in this particular proposal.
Correct. The future implications of this.
It's future generations will be interpreting it.
Correct. And it's not clear. There are many things that have potential here because of the broad language that can be interpreted. And one of the things that lawyers love is broad language.
And ambiguity.
This is that word you just said is very true. When I see that first sentence that says establish new individual right to reproductive freedom.
What was that? What does that mean? What,
identify what they're saying when they say the word individual.
That's what I wonder. What does that mean?
Because that is clearly a woman, but there is something, there's something very ambiguous about that word individual that is going to be decided in courts.
And even to more of a controversial thing is one of the individuals the fetus, the baby itself?
Yeah.
And that's not really addressed if
I... And when you read it, there's also what happens if there is the loss of life in this situation where it's a miscarriage or stillbirth, whatever. How do you determine how that life was lost? Because there could be something on the books right now considered a crime would later be, and I'm not talking going back to 1931, I'm talking about abuse or something where a child loses their life because of abuse. Would that person now be considered not a criminal because of what they're doing? So there's a lot of gray area in this that it seems like there's something about this is very questionable.
And it's thought or people have brought up the point is that this may be impacting 41 laws that are already been thoughtfully produced over time. And
wow.
Well, that's a concern because the very last thing says, invalidate state laws conflicting with this amendment. If this is approved, then yes, if there's other laws that are already on the books.
We'll supersede it.
Yes, it doesn't matter what those laws were. This one is going to take precedent. And that is really concerning when we already have laws.
Well, you think about the time frame here. People didn't expect Roe v. Wade to be reversed. It kind of came on as a surprise, and this is in response to that. It's only been a few months. Is this the highest standard that those interested in this area can provide? Is this the highest standard we as Michigan voters can provide? Or should we have more thoughtfully crafted legislation on the subject?
And that's, I think that's a caveat that covers all of these issues. You know, literally there are more, we're coming to the end of this time frame, but there are more issues that deals with clinics and various things of how this is going to be implemented. It changes the landscape. If it was approved, yes means to legalize abortion in the state of Michigan, and no defeats this and reverts to the current legislation.
It's not just about abortion.
No.
It talks about, you know, postpartum care, contraception, sterilization. Well, what's that mean? That's one of the questions I have when I'm reading this. And folks, my personal opinion, if I don't understand a proposal, I always vote no just because I don't understand it. Right. Unless I've really studied it, which I'm looking at studying these really, really hard, but... And then, like you said at the very beginning, David, all three of these change the state constitution.
That's right. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And is that good or bad? What, Cam, you've been saying, is it higher standard?
And I like what Cam said. Is this the highest standard we can set? And as citizens, wouldn't we want the highest standard for our law of the state?
Some of us would, some of us wouldn't.
Well, you know, there's that whole side, yeah.
Well, folks, I hope that this brought these three issues from maybe not on your radar to being right there and you're saying, I've got to study this. I have to make a personal decision.
And, you know, as broadcasters, we are not to have a call to action, and we are not trying to do a call to action in this, but we would encourage you as listeners that you would look at these measures, that you would research it yourself, and that you would follow your conscience and vote as your conscience is telling you.
Yes. Just because in the last couple of weeks you see ads, we're not seeing a lot about Proposal 1 or Proposal 2. You're seeing a lot about Proposal 3 because it is very controversial. But you need to study what they say and what it means. And these very ambiguous, some of these words.
Right.
And these things have long-term consequences.
That's right. Yes.
So we hope we're helping to educate our listeners on, you go get more education regarding the Michigan proposals. There's three of them. And it is a God-given right for us to vote.
That's right.
And I've always said if you don't vote about something and you don't like how it turned out, you have no right to complain. That's my personal opinion. I don't know how you guys feel, but so vote on November 8th is the actual voting, or if you filled out an absentee ballot, get that filled out and mailed back in. So thank you, folks, for listening. We appreciate it, and may God continue to lead, guide, and richly bless you.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.